Welcome to the newest Fierce Love podcast, Single Not Stalled, Pursuing Sanctity in Your Singleness. This podcast is for Catholic women who find themselves living the single life, whether it's by choice, vocation, or circumstance. Here we believe that this time is not just a waiting period, but a season rich with purpose, growth, and grace. Join your hosts, Monica and Katie, two sisters navigating the single life from different perspectives, as we dive into conversations about faith, friendship, personal growth, and finding joy in the everyday. Let's embrace this extraordinary journey together. Part two of Limiting Beliefs. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, go back and listen to that before you listen to this one, because this is part two. So you're going to miss some of the intro to this and some of our earlier conversation.
Yeah, where we talk about, you know, what is a limiting belief? Why does it matter that we identify these? What's the point of kind of reframing them? Or the benefits of doing so.
Mm-hmm. And then we worked through like three different limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
So far, we've got a handful more to get through.
We do indeed. Mm-hmm. You want to start?
Yeah. So one of the ones that we were thinking of as a limiting belief is, and I think this might be a little bit more for those who are situationally single as opposed to those vocationally single, but like that my life hasn't started yet.
Yeah. I hear this all the time.
Yeah.
It is one of the fastest ways to really annoy me. Like, I think I struggle with these kind of, I don't know, are they tropes, anecdotal? Like, this belief or this idea that, like, I'm not a whole person because I'm not married.
Yeah.
Or that my life hasn't started, or that my life is only
life
born or
begins
worthy.
After the I do.
Yeah, like, what a Disney BS. Like, good gosh. Like,
that's funny. I remember when I was teaching Christian anthropology, and we would just do discussions. We'd read a little bit, and then we'd do discussions, and you know, I was teaching senior girls in high school, and one of them said, we were talking about prayer life, and one of them said, like, I mean, I'm going to have a really good prayer life when I'm a mom. And I said, I'm sorry, what? I was like, why? Like, because you're just going to be, like, so dedicated to praying for your kids and, like, there. And she was like, no, I'll have more time then. And I burst out laughing, and I was like, oh, that was probably not the right response in the moment. But I burst out laughing, and I said, I think you're delusional.
Oh.
You're definitely delulu. If you think, as a mother, you're going to have more time than you have right now as a high school senior. And she's like, well, I'm just so busy. And I was like, let me tell you something. Like, until you're retired, like, your life's just going to keep getting busier.
Well, we just busy is a belief. It's a mindset.
Well, that's true. But like, so, you're going to have more on your plate as a mom who's a wife and a mother and all the things than you do as a high school senior who doesn't take care of your own meals. You don't pay any bills. You're probably maybe helping with the chores, but like, you're not caring for the house. Yeah. Like, are you kidding?
What an interesting perspective.
Anyway, but it was reminding me of this kind of limiting belief that I think a lot of people who are situationally single can have is like, my life hasn't started yet. Like, it'll start when I get married or it'll start when I have my first kid.
Yeah. I think that's two episodes ago of kind of like delaying living your life, right? Or kind of establishing these things. But there's also this, you know, I think I could be wrong. I'm open to that. Sometimes if we hold this belief that my life hasn't started yet, we're kind of making an idol out of marriage or out of a husband, out of a relationship, that we've put it on this pedestal that it is somehow like better or holier than where God has chosen to place you.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not this, like, there's nothing in Catholicism that's magical. Like, not even our novenas and our prayers. It's not magic.
Right.
That's not how this works. Like, it is relationship with God, and that, you know, we have to be constantly kind of nurturing that. And if we kind of have this false belief that my life doesn't start until XYZ happens, we are choosing to not correspond to where God has you and saying that you know better, right? That my life will start at a particular point. Like, we could have a whole, I'm going off on a tangent. We could have a whole episode on this that, like, I know better when my life should start. And God's like, no, I gave you your life here and now.
Well, and like, honestly, your life started at conception, right? Like, I mean, if we're really going to get technical right? Like, and then maybe too, your life started with, like, one of the bishops at Seek in the homily encouraged everyone to consider when they first became enamored by Christ.
I know. I've been thinking about that
ever since. This is a slight tangent, but I think it's so worth it because he was commenting on the gospel passage of the calling of Peter and Andrew. Mm. And in that passage, and now I don't remember which gospel, I think it was John's gospel. It goes through the whole story, right? They're like fishing, da da da, whatever, calls him. But it says, and it was 4 PM. And the bishop points out, like, this is not a throwaway comment. Like, nothing in the gospel is a throwaway comment, but this is not a throwaway comment. It was so impactful and so powerful to Peter that he remembers the exact moment in which he became enamored by Christ and decided to give his life to him.
Powerful.
And it had to be written down. And so he encouraged everyone to consider, when was the moment you became enamored by Christ? And I think for those of us who were cradle Catholics, like Monica and I, it's a little bit harder to answer that, right? Like, I think our mom, who's a convert, could probably answer that a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Like, when did she become enamored? Like, when did she really fall in love? For us, it's a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But I can still think of moments in which I'm like, oh, I think it was this.
Interesting.
I think it was, you know, I think there are different things. But, like, I can definitely be like, oh, I think this. And I don't know how old I was at certain times. But, like, I can remember moments where I was like, oh.
But what's so interesting is that, you know, if we stick with that gospel story, like, Peter's life didn't begin at 4 p.m. His life changed at 4 p.m. And that everything leading up until that time was a really important part of his story.
Totally.
Bringing him to this exact moment where he would encounter Christ. And so nothing, like, nothing is a waste to God. Like,
right.
Please, like, how insulting. Like, nothing is wasted in him. And right. So everything we do and everything he allows to be is ultimately for his greater glory and understanding. And our understanding of that is limited, maybe. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, so my reframe on this, and there's a million and one that you can do, but, like, what came to mind was, we could have this belief, my life hasn't started. And we can reframe that with, like, my life is in motion. Mm-hmm. Like, I am in motion. And it doesn't mean that I'm where I want to be or that I'm exactly where, like, it's complicated, right? But, like, my life is in motion, and that motion mm-hmm. and that movement is very important.
Yeah. I would almost want to reframe it, you know, from my life hasn't started to, like, I am becoming in the sense of, like, hopefully, right? Like, we are constantly working at becoming who God wants us to be. Mm-hmm. Right. And becoming that saint that mm-hmm. we are called to be. Right. And, like, that this is a process, that this isn't, like, an instantaneous thing. Like you said, like, yeah, okay. At 4 PM, Peter and Andrew found Christ. And then they had, like, a new way of becoming, like, that, mm-hmm. that was part of their becoming the saints that we know them to be mm-hmm. today. Mm-hmm. Right. And, like, to your point, that nothing that came before that, them being fishermen, is a really important part of them being fishers of men later on.
Yeah.
Right?
God knew what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Wild.
What?
So we can do a whole episode on that. But I do think that kind of this idea of my life hasn't started.
Mm-hmm.
They're so easy to think that, right? Because we have a want and a desire, you know, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. This is even making me think, like, so Christ, right? Like, Christ comes, he lives 30 years in obscurity, and he lives 3 years in public life. Hmm. He didn't say, and even church fathers don't teach, like, Christ saved us with 3 years of his life. Hmm. That's not true. We say, right, like, we were sanctified. We, the gates of heaven were open to us, not just with the death and resurrection of Christ, but with the 33 years he was on earth, right? And, like, this is one of the things that St. Jose Maria talks a lot about is, like, those hidden years, those 30 hidden years in which he was a carpenter, in which he was a normal guy, in which, like, he goes to the wedding of his friends. He, like, okay, turns water into wine. Like, whatever. Like, those 30 mostly hidden years is part of our sanctification, was mm-hmm. part of his whole journey and that whole process mm-hmm. of our sanctification. And mm-hmm. so, I mean, if that was true for Christ, how much more so for us, mm-hmm. right? That each day, each moment mm-hmm. is part of this whole process of our sanctification mm-hmm. and our reaching heaven.
Yeah. I love that.
Tangent again, but... I love it.
Amazing. Okay, what's the next one?
Okay, this is a limiting belief that I think happens a lot if you're vocationally single. And I'm curious if you feel it as much if you're situationally single. Hmm. But, you know, for those who are like live in family life or live in community life, you know, especially like, let's say you move, right? You get asked like, could you move here? Or like at SEEK, we were talking to the vocations director of the Daughters of St. Paul, mm-hmm. and they closed down the Chicago location to just better take care of their communities. And so that meant taking all those nuns who were living in Chicago and sending them to different communities that they kept open, right? And I was thinking of those nuns who had to leave Chicago, and maybe they'd been there for a long time, and some of them were definitely older, and like maybe they moved to St. Louis, for instance, or wherever else. You know, and you move into the room that's available.
Yeah.
They're not decorating the room. They're not. And so I think you can have this limiting belief that that I don't have my own space.
Mm.
Right. And I think, you know, the same, like, you know, like I moved a lot. I moved a lot. I moved every 2 years for the first, like, 14 years that I was a numerary. I had a different location, a different address every 2 years. And, you know, you're like, you don't move into a center of Opus Dei and then, like, repaint your walls and, like, pick your bedspread and whatever. It's like, here's the room that's available for you. Welcome to the family, right, of here. And you can feel like, oh, this, okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, like, great.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm. Do you know what, though? I actually think situationally single women could experience a really similar sentiment. I think this is unique to women.
Yeah.
Insofar as we love, like, nesting and creating space, and it's a form of, like, love and expression and nurturing and so forth. And so, you know, there were, like, years where I spent living with friends.
Sure.
And you're just like literally blending everything. And I remember always thinking like, this is temporary because I'll have my own space one day, or like I'll have my own family. And like, I get to decide what that looks like.
Yeah.
And like how we decorate our house and so forth. So some people live alone. Sure. Like the singles live alone. But I think that there's like an idea of like, they could have this mindset of, like, I don't have these bigger things that I thought I would have if I was married, like a home or like certain vehicles or
the nicer furniture.
Sure.
You just have the IKEA furniture.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And you're like, at this point, great. I thought I would have, you know, Lazy Boys. I have no idea. But I think that that is possibly right for some this longing or desire to like put down roots and some stability in one place. Like I think speaking for myself, I move a lot.
Yeah.
Like house to house, apartment to this different place. You know, at least every year. There were seasons of my life where it was like every 6 months or every 9 months or something like that, I was kind of uprooted again. And there's a craving for putting down roots and a sense of stability that like kind of naturally come with getting married and family life. So
it's true. Like, I think a lot of people who are, you know, situationally single, unless you're in your 30s or older, like, you probably aren't, like, buying a house and right. that kind of a thing. And so you do almost have this little bit of a temporary mindset of, like, well, my lease is up every April. And so every, you know, February, I need to start thinking, like, am I moving? Am I changing? Am I, right? And, like, you can kind of think, and even like I'm renting, so I might not be able to paint the walls the way I want them to be, or like I might have to take that wallpaper down. So like, is it even worth it? You know, like that kind of thing. So it's true. Like, I'm sure that's something that, you know, a lot of people struggle with, whether you're, yeah, like gifted your room that's just set up the way you want. And like, you could like maybe move your bed to the other side of the wall, but like, you know, that's like,
So, but I think a way, so the kind of formula and reframing is to think about like, well, why does that matter? Like, what's important to me? Or kind of like, what's that pain point? And I think that oftentimes our living environment or having your own space is one, an extension of you and an expression of you. And so the kind of reframe there is to see that I can kind of extend myself or express myself in my environment and in the things around me. I have the opportunity to always do that. Now, there may be constraints to that, but that those ideas or those sentiments are still there, or kind of having my own place would suggest like putting down roots. Like I can put down deep roots where I am.
Right. I think too, it's also a little bit of like, for those vocationally, like, this is part of the call that you were given a little bit. And so it's almost a little bit of, like, choosing to own that space.
Mm.
Right? Like, okay, like, I don't have a space of my own. Or, like, okay, this is my space. Mm-hmm. And this is the bedspread that I have. And, like, okay, right? Like, this is part of my yes to God.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is part of what I agreed when I said I was going to give him everything, mm-hmm. as opposed to, like, okay, well, I'll grin and bear it. And, like, it's fine. Like, and maybe you do. Maybe the bedspread's horrible. I don't know. I mean,
it's funny though, because as you're speaking, I'm like thinking back to, like, my childhood where it's like, yeah, this is the yes or the acceptance of, like, family life. And
totally.
It's like, I didn't like the hand-me-downs all the time. I didn't want this bedspread. I wanted to paint my room in this color. I was the youngest girl. Like, I didn't get my first pick. Are you kidding me? Like, they had to say.
You got your own room at some point, though, I never did.
You all moved out.
Well, so, I mean, I did when I was, like, one, but that was...
So, but that, you know, in the vocationally single,
mm-hmm.
the opportunity there, right, is, like, that yes and that acceptance of, like, my family life and that, like, oh, this is my family's comforter. And
yeah,
I love that for me.
Like, yeah. And I inherited it from whoever was here before.
You know, and there's something really kind of beautiful there, right? Mm-hmm. To see that shift in perspective, kind of opening your eyes to maybe, like, not ideal, but mm-hmm. there's something here in there.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, mm-hmm. owning that kind of family atmosphere. It's funny when I remember complaining, this is very random, but kind of funny. When I joined Opus Dei, I was complaining about the way that we say the rosary. Because it was different from the way that our family said the rosary growing up. And I was, like, struggling with that, right? And so I, like, said this to someone. I said this actually to my spiritual director at the time, because I was like, I'm having a hard time with the rosary. Like, I want to say the rosary the way, like, my family says it. Because, like, whatever, I'd grown up 17 years praying the rosary one way. And, like, we would pray it every Saturday, probably every Saturday and Sunday for most of my life.
There's something, like, intimate about what you know.
Exactly. And the person was like, okay. Like, when you're alone, pray it however you want. And then when you're with your biological family, you pray the way your biological family does. And when you're with your spiritual family, you pray the way your spiritual family does. And I was like, it's so simple, but I was so profoundly impacted by that, because I was like, it's true, right? Like, this is the family I chose. This is the family that I've been, you know, vocationally given. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm going to love that when I'm with them. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to love, you know, when I'm with mom and dad and we're driving in the car, like, do you want to say the rosary? And we say it that way. Like, that, it's great, you know?
Yeah. That's amazing. I actually didn't even realize that there were different ways to say the rosary.
I know.
Well, until you kind of, like, start dating. And then it's like, wait, why did you just say that? Like, you know, and it's kind of, it's a blending, and there's a learning curve in there.
Or it's like when you go to dinner at someone else's house and they have, like, all these different prayers that go with the meal blessing. And, like, in our family, we just said the, like, bless us, O Lord, and that's it. But a lot of families do, like, the prayer for the souls in purgatory, and then, like, and then for grandpa or whatever. And you're like, oh, I'm
rolling
sorry.
With the flow.
Yeah. You're like,
but I think that, you know, there's something beautiful there if you're willing to see it. And,
right.
And sometimes, given our emotional worlds and realities and things that are hard to come to terms with and accept, mm-hmm. it's the emotions that kind of step in and make it a little bit difficult to accept reality or to see the beauty in reality or other perspectives. And so, you know, we don't want to, like, diminish, like, how hard it is maybe to let go of this fact that, like, I want to, you know, extend myself into this room and into this space and really, like, have my own, like, put down roots. But we also want to allow ourselves to see that, like, the things mm-hmm. that we desire, like, the desires God puts on our heart, there are ways to live and express that. It may not look like what you wanted it to look like or what the idea was, but reframing realistic views, these things, these opportunities help you see that, like, there are ways to be living this in a unique way,
mm-hmm.
given your current situation and circumstance in life.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I was even thinking too, like, our mom was, like, a city girl, and our dad is a country boy. I'm sure she didn't want deer heads on the wall.
Absolutely not.
But, like, there are deer heads on the wall. You know, like, they had to figure out how to blend that, right? And I am 100% sure she did not want that. But she leaned into it. Like, at some point, she, like, really leaned into it. And we were, like, the house looked a little bit like a hunting cabin for a bit. Like, but she, like, leaned into it. Because, like, because love is a choice, right? Yeah. And like, she's choosing to love, and she's choosing to love in this way. And I think the same with when you're feeling like, I don't have my own space, but like, but I can choose this.
Yeah.
I can decide to choose this. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So one of the next ones I want to talk about is, cause I think this is so like salient for situationally single ladies. And so I'm curious if it's also true for, the vocationally single, is that there's this belief that I'm running out of time.
I can only speak of myself personally for this one, because I don't know. I've never really talked to anyone. I think sometimes I feel, and I would imagine others who are vocationally single feel this, that like St. Augustine's quote, like, late have I loved. Like, oh, have I wasted time? Like, have I not, you know, like, have I not given my all? Because the answer is no, right? Like, we've never, like, we're struggling. We're always struggling for holiness. But there's definitely, like, maybe I could have done more. I could have loved more. Not do more. I could have loved more. I think there's always that feeling, or there can always be that feeling, right? So I think in that sense, it can be like, I'm running out of time. I'm running out of time to, like, to love as much as he's asking me to love, or as much as he loves. But I don't feel like, in the same way that people are situationally single and they feel like, I'm running out of time to get married, I'm running out of time to have a child.
Yeah.
Because, like, the biological clock is ticking.
I do think that there is a reality of the biological clock for everybody, though.
Oh, like, for sure.
I wonder if, and I don't even know how you could, like, conduct this research, but I wonder if vocationally single women, and I would love to hear from our listeners, if there's a point in their vocation where that biological clock does, like, rear its head. It's like, hey, and if there's a little bit of, not a vocational crisis, but coming to terms with a reckoning of, you know, like, yeah, this decision is final. Like, I can't step away from this vocation and have kids, because, like, the biological clock is ticking, right? Yeah.
I think probably not everyone is cognizant of it. But I mean, I've talked to many people who are, like, my age, right? And, like, so we're, like, just hitting the end of our 30s, entering our 40s. And, like, early to mid-30s is really hard. And a lot of people kind of walk away from vocations at that time, or, you know, decide God's asking them for something else. And I think partly it is because they have this, and maybe they don't even realize it, but they feel this biological clock is kind of ticking. I don't know if this is true for the men. Probably not, because they don't have biological clocks in the same way. But for women, definitely. And I will say, like, probably my hardest year ever vocationally, and, like, obviously, like, I joined Opus Dei when I was 17, so it's been a hot minute, was the year I turned 33. Like, it was just a really, really hard year, and I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, I don't know if I can do this for the rest of my life. Like, and it took a lot of, like, grappling with our Lord and, like, working it through and, like, struggle busing. But I don't think I realized at the time that it was probably also a biological clock thing, where suddenly I was like,
well, yeah, because it's, if I'm going to stick with this, like, or if I'm not going to stick with this, if it's not what God's asking of me, I got to go now.
I got to go now. I got to find someone now so that I can have a chance of having a kid. Like, if, and I don't, like, I don't ever remember cognizantly thinking that.
You know what? I remember when I was discerning in my, like, early 20s, and I was, had spiritual direction with this priest, and we were talking about the fact that he said the hardest thing for women who are discerning celibacy is coming to terms with giving up biological motherhood. And that's a wrestling that they have to come to. And men have different wrestlings of things that they have to give up and things that they had wanted or things that they're biologically driven towards, right? Like, there is something about the vocationally single that is going against one's biology, because we are all called to marriage in the, like, natural biological sense. Our bodies are oriented to union with another. And so there's a stepping away from that. There's a giving that up. And that there's, you know, I think at some point probably a wrestling with this reality.
Yeah. And I think it's probably a continuous wrestling with, too, right? Like, certainly, like, I wrestled with it as I was discerning my vocation, trying to figure it all out. And I can remember having conversations with my parents about it, and like with some of my friends, and even just in my prayer life, thinking like, okay, like if I'm saying yes to this, like I'm giving this to our Lord, like I'm giving this up. And I'm like, I gotta do it willingly. Like I gotta be like, yes, like I'm giving you my future children who I'm never having, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm giving that to you. But I think there's probably also other times in your life. And I think, you know, like we were talking about, I don't even remember which limiting belief we were talking about this with, but that like I can remember like making that decision and thinking like, okay, like I'm in, like good, okay. And it was like really easy while all my friends were also single.
Yeah.
And then when all my friends started getting married and having kids, I suddenly was like re-grappling with this decision and this vocation, because suddenly I was like, oh, like now our lives look really different. Whereas before, our lives didn't look very different.
Yeah, a sense of feeling like left behind.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, like I can remember like I met up with a couple of my friends from high school, and all of them, it was four of us. And the other three were all married, all had kids. Mm-hmm. And all three of them were nursing. And so the four of us met, they're all nursing at the table. We're all sitting there talking. And I was just like, I don't have anything to say because mm-hmm. I don't know what 3 o'clock feedings are like and teething toddlers. And yeah. Like, it was just, and suddenly it was this moment of like, while I theoretically understand that and, you know, experience that with my siblings, and I can experience that with my nieces and nephews and my friends' kids, like I will never have that for myself. Mm-hmm. And so again, there's that, but like anything, it's that reconfirmation. Like you re-give your yes to God.
Yeah.
You know, and you give that back to him again. Yeah. You're like, okay,
yeah,
I've made the decision today again to give it to you. Just like I think couples that are married and they have to be like, and today again, I'm choosing to love you.
Yeah. You say I do a million and one times. And I think that for the situationally single, like that situation you've described, like I've absolutely been
there, yeah,
right? Like, you know, I feel like I have nothing to contribute to this conversation. We are all in very different stages of life, or like you three are different than me, and right. so but I think in that is that I think for me, like kind of wrestling with like those feelings and things that came up, part of the mentality of like I'm running out of time is coming from a scarcity mindset. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that's given me like consolation, but that is also like true, is that like our God is a God of abundance. Mm. He's not stingy with his love and with his gifts and with his timing. And so like whatever timing he has planned for you and however he chooses to express that to you, like there will be an abundance
right
there, right? Like there is an abundance of good and beauty in your singleness. And there will be, God willing, if you get married, an abundance of beauty in that time, in that space, when it's meant to be. Right.
Right.
And so the whole idea of I'm running out of time, I think one of the reminders, one of those reframes is I have today. It's mm-hmm. really all we have. I have today. And God's timing is abundant.
This is also making me think of, you know, I think the mindset or this limiting belief, like I'm running out of time, also makes time mine. Mm. And time is not yours, right? Time is a gift that God has given you.
Yeah.
Right. St. Jose Maria has a homily called Time is a Treasure. Mm. But in it, there's this great phrase that basically like time is like the money with which you buy heaven.
Mm.
Right. That's a bad translation of it. But basically like our time is all we have. Like time is what God has given us. And like we have to like use that. It's that treasure with which we get to buy heaven if we choose to use our time well. But like it's technically not ours. It's like God gave it to us. It's mm-hmm. just like, you know, and so it's a gift. God has given us mm-hmm. this time. And so like who are we to be like, this is the wrong gift. Right.
I know.
Or your gift isn't enough.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if you were looking at God, I don't think anybody like face to face would be like, God, this isn't enough. Well, you haven't given me enough.
And I kind of like I had to wrestle with this one like pretty significantly.
Yeah.
Just like given where like I'm at personally in my life. And, you know, I was thinking like I can't say this to our listeners without actually believing it.
Good.
Right. There's something that feels like so disingenuous to like do what I say, yeah, but yeah. not what I do, yeah. or like wax poetic. Mm-hmm. I hate that. I hate the podcast that like wax poetic, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, shut up. You're so disconnected.
Where's the practical?
You're so disconnected from my lived reality. My lived reality sucks. Okay. And I was crying about this the other night. Right. Like, okay. So, but what is true about that? And, mm-hmm. and in part, it's that these limiting beliefs or these negative thoughts keep me from seeing the reality and the abundance. Mm-hmm. And this is the opportunity and the challenge to say, okay, Lord, then show me. Mm-hmm. Like, show me what is bountiful about mm-hmm. my current life and situation, because I'm having a hard time seeing it and I don't feel it.
Right. Or show me how you want me to use this time.
Right. And I think that when you can shift that perspective, it allows you to correspond better mm-hmm. with God's will mm-hmm. for your life, and to be content, to be happy with where mm-hmm. he has you, because you're actually able to see the fruit of what he's doing, right? And it's okay to ask for that. It's okay to say, like, mm-hmm. I don't see it. I want to live in an abundance mindset, and I'm struggling. Show me the way. Because I think you would be surprised, like, if you let him in, mm-hmm. if you allow him to highlight and spotlight things, like, you start to live it and believe it and see it. And then you see other opportunities mm-hmm. to spotlight that. So I think personally, like, for example, one of the insights I, like, came to was that this time of singleness that I've had has given me an opportunity, unlike any of my other siblings, mm-hmm. to be extremely present to my siblings mm-hmm. in ways that I would not have been if I had been married, like yeah. the timeline that I thought or wanted to be, that I've been able to, like, move in with particular siblings and help them. Numerous siblings have called me in the middle of the night to be like, hey, we're in labor. Can you come over right. and, like, sleep here so that the other babies wake up? Like, and that has been such a blessing to mm-hmm. deepen my relationship with my siblings, but also, like, be there for my nieces and nephews in ways that no one else has been able to, given, like, the limitations of their life and situation. And so, right. like,
yeah, that God's leading it. Like, yeah, God's giving you that Auntie Mona time mm. that you wouldn't have in the same yeah. way. Yeah. If your time was different, right? Yeah. If your situation was different.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah absolutely.
Amazing.
Yeah, there's so many things.
There's so many other things that we could probably talk about. But I think I'm curious to hear what our listeners kind of think are maybe some of their top, like, limiting beliefs, or if we didn't kind of cover any of them to, like, let us know. Because I'm curious, we could do a whole other episode on some other maybe mm-hmm. ways to kind of challenge, like, what our own limiting beliefs, or even, like, society puts limiting beliefs on us, right?
Mm-hmm. I know, I was, like, trying to think of my own limiting beliefs just in my own life, and I mentioned this last episode, but, like, I'm never gonna learn Spanish. Like, this is definitely a limiting belief I've had forever, and this is, like, so small and tiny compared to some of these bigger ones that we're talking about. But yeah, like, I think there's so many things like that that you're like, I just have this this fixed mindset about it or whatever, and I need to reframe. I need to have more of a growth mm-hmm. mindset, or I need to really look at different things. I think something that's probably unique to people who are vocationally single is I have nothing in common with these people. Like, a limiting belief, right? Like, again, like, you think of, like, those nuns from the Daughters of St. Paul who got moved to a new location, and suddenly moving with all these people who are, like, strangers, but, like, sisters mm-hmm. to you. And then you can look around. It can be easy to look around and be like, oh, what the heck?
I did not choose any of you.
Yeah, like, I didn't choose any of you. Like, it's not like, and I mean, we can say the same about our biological family, right? Like, sometimes I look around at our biological family and I was like, I don't know if I'd be friends with all y'all.
Who raised
exactly.
you?
Exactly. yeah. And I think, you know, that's something that's really interesting. But the kind of flip side, or the different way to look at that is, like, yeah, but, like, what an opportunity to find connection and to create meaning. Mm-hmm. And also, too, with the idea that, like, you have the grace to do that, right? Because, like, you're given the grace to live that family life or that community life. And, like, God knows, right? Mm-hmm. Like, God knows y'all were going to be together, and, like, somehow it's okay. Like, somehow it's going to work, or it's going to be a big learning curve for you and a big mm-hmm. growth opportunity mm-hmm. or whatever, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. I like that one.
It's good. Yeah. So I think,
what's our thought project for the week?
I feel like people should think of a limiting belief they have.
Yeah. And then come up with a reframe. Some tips for reframes is that we want to validate the feeling and experience that this belief is causing for you, right? So we're not saying like, don't think that, or like, well, but no, that this is coming from like an emotional place, a place of the heart, and that that's okay. And that a reframe is best when it's, I like keeping them short, too long, we forget. Short, positive. Speaks to the heart of the issue and positive. So for example, we could say, you know, oftentimes we tell ourselves like, never, don't, stop, and those can trigger, I cannot. And so that is like, our brain doesn't register that well. So we want to stick with like kind of positive sentiments moving forward. So to Katie, to sort of go off of your most recent example, is that we could say, I have nothing in common with these people. And we could rephrase that in a way where we say, I will not see the negative in people. But our brain kind of registers that as like negative people, right? And so we want to redirect our mind in the direction we want it to go. So tell ourselves where to go in a positive way. So that's when we say, I will, or I have the opportunity to find connection and create meaning. Mm-hmm. So our brain is registering, create connection and meaning.
Yeah. Can I also add, I think I'd like, just given our society today, and then we're all about manifesting and like da-da-da-da, right? Like, I think a lot of advice you would get if you were listening to whatever, a secular podcast or something along these lines, is like, let's say, again, let's take the limiting belief is, I have nothing in common with these people. And they would have you reframe that as, I have so much in common with these people.
No.
And like, repeat that in the mirror multiple times and like manifest it into existence. But our brains, I was reading something about this, like these like, you know, like, I am rich beyond my wildest dreams, right? When you're like actually poor and broke and like paying all your student loans. But they tell you like, manifest it into the world and it will happen, right? This is kind of the new woo-woo idea out there. But your brain knows it's a lie. Like your brain knows like, no, you don't. I've seen your bank account. Like, I know you don't got millions, right? So it's not, that's not what we're suggesting with this reframing of limiting beliefs. We're not saying make a statement that's untrue.
Right.
We're saying, let's look at this realistically and what's another way of seeing this thing.
Yeah.
That's more positive, that brings better light or better insights into it for us to grow and improve and
move forward. So the point is that there's growth. The limiting belief holds us back. And so we want it to resonate. And what the helpful point there, right? So your example of rich, well, because like I'm initially taking that as financial.
Right.
And the reframe there, if we actually decide to look at richness as abundance, I could say a reframe there that could feel true is that like I have rich, meaningful, abundant relationships.
Sure.
In my life. And that, I'm still using the word, I'm shifting the perspective, but that's what's true about it. Mm-hmm. It's like, not telling myself, I am rich. And your brain is like, we have no money in our bank account.
Right. Or I think it could be too, on the more practical, like if we were looking at rich specifically as money, it's like, I have the tools or can find the tools to make more money, right? Mm-hmm. To grow this, to, you know, and like that too is just a different way of looking at it instead of like, I just don't have money. Mm-hmm. Okay, but like, but I have the tools or I can find the tools.
Yeah.
To change that or to adjust.
We could do a whole episode on our wordplay or even just this idea of yet or becoming.
I love adding yet to the end of things. Because I don't know Spanish yet.
Yet, right? So it doesn't, that the yet helps us make it feel like there's a possibility, right? Whereas we could look in the mirror and say, I will learn Spanish. And there's a part of your brain that's like, but we haven't in 40 years. And
we're bad at it. I know Spanish. I speak like a native. No, you don't.
But yet. I don't
know. Don't miss. Yeah.
No. It's opportunity.
Exactly.
This is awesome.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the homework. Think of your limiting belief. And let us know. We'll try and think of more, maybe ones that are specific for us and do that.
That's it for this week on Single Not Stalled. We hope this episode gave you new insights and a renewed sense of purpose in your daily life. Wherever you are on your journey, remember that God is with you. And this season is filled with opportunities to grow, flourish, and make an impact. If you're loving this podcast, please take a moment to rate and review it. It helps more women like you find this community. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Join us on social media, on Instagram at singlenotstalled, or shoot us an email at singlenotstalled@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Until next time, keep living fully and walking boldly.